Good morning.
We're not here.
I will wake up sooner or later. I would like to welcome everyone this morning to the to a special council meeting of the Mesa City Council, Thursday, May 7th, 2009. Call this meeting to order, and first item we have is the consent agenda. Kevin, Mr. Christopher, if you would please read the consent agenda.
I know. Good morning. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the City Council and will be enacted with one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a council member or citizen request, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed from the consent agenda, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 4B, Act on Resolution approving HUD funding for fiscal year 09 and 10 for city department projects for the CDBG program. Item 4D, Act on Resolution approving HUD funding for fiscal year 09-10 for city department projects through the HOME program. And Item 4F, Act on Resolution approving MESA annual action plan for fiscal year 09-10 and the one-year consolidated plan for fiscal year 09-10. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I'd like to note that items 4A and 4C are not on the consent agenda because the vice mayor has a potential conflict.
There we go.
So that's why they're not on there.
Cool.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Well, first of all, we need to ask if he wants to remove. Are there any other items that council member needs to remove from the consent agenda? Ms. Crocker, are there any requests from the public to remove an item?
No request, Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion to approve from Councilmember Summers, a second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The consent agenda is approved. Yes, Mr. Brady.
And Mayor, we can do the other items as a group,
as a group.
Just recognizing that the vice mayor will be excusing himself.
Okay, so we have items, Kevin. Oh, I'm sorry. That's fine, I'll go ahead and do that. Items 4A, 4C, and 4E will be considered as a group. Item 4A is approving authorizing city manager to proceed with an application for the Department of Housing and Urban Development on funding for community development block grants. Item 4C is approving and authorizing city manager to proceed with an application to Department of Housing and Urban Development for fiscal year 2009-10 for funding for nonprofit organizations through the Home Investment Partnerships Program. And item 4E is approving and authorizing the city manager to proceed with an application to the Department of Housing and Urban Development for fiscal year 2009-2010 for funding for nonprofit organizations through the Emergency Shelter Grant Program. Entertain a motion?
So,
oh.
See, now you're out of order.
Yeah, you ought to go. That's what I'm saying. Look.
Yes, because of work that I have done with various organizations, I need to recuse myself from this discussion or voting on these items.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. We have a motion. A motion from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Yes.
Okay, good. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative with the vice mayor recusing himself due to potential conflict. We'll now move to item 2 on the agenda, which is to hear a report concerning the bids received for the purchase of the city's general obligation bonds, the utility service revenues bonds, and both of those. So, Mr. Raines.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Usually this process is a fairly quick one with you. We just come in and tell you what we got on our bids and you approve it and go forward. But this morning, if you'll give me a few minutes of indulgence, I think we have some good news to pass along. If you remember, in April, Council gave us permission to go to the markets to sell both general obligation bonds and utility system revenue bonds. Soon thereafter, the federal government announced a program called the Build America Bonds that Larry can explain in more detail. And as we moved through our process to get ready to go to sale, we evaluated the option to sell some of our bonds under this new program. And it has proved pretty beneficial to us. We were in the market yesterday. We were pleased to have multiple bidders. On our general obligation bonds, we had 6 bids, with the lowest bid from Merrill Lynch being about 0.2% lower than even our last year's bid. So the market was good there. The good news comes on the revenue bond side. We provided an option for bidders to either bid as a taxable, normal utility tax-exempt utility revenue bond or as a taxable Build America bond. The taxable Build America bonds were much more, popular, I guess, in the market, Larry, with 9 bids versus only 1 on the tax-exempt side. And we have seen a rate that is about 1% lower than last year, our net interest cost. And the rate for the bid that we're recommending on Build America bonds saves us about $12 million in interest costs in the future over the other option of the tax-exempt bonds. So it's been a very, very good market for us. I think we were one of the first ones to go in Arizona with the Build America bonds. Larry and Keith Hoskins from Gus Rosenfeld can describe the program in more detail.
Mayor, members of council, good morning. I would caution the results. We did receive one tax-exempt bid, which we compared against the winning bidder on the Build America, taxable Build America bonds, net of the subsidy or the stimulus that the federal government will be providing as far as subsidizing the interest. They pay 35% of the every semiannual interest payment in order to create a new market for securities for municipalities was the idea behind it. I'll let Keith talk about it in a minute. One thing I'd caution, the reason that we got 9 bids on the Build America bonds is because the market is pretty savvy out there, and they realize that turning a bid in as a tax-exempt bond was not going to win. And so I would just tell you the reason we only got 1 bid, I don't know what Morgan Stanley was thinking, but I'm glad they gave us a bid so we could compare it, the tax-exempt bid. But in reality, the reason why we didn't get more bidders tax-exempt is because they did the math. And the taxable bonds work. The Build America bond market has been evolving, and evolved just in time for our bid, really. City of Mesa, this is, the largest competitive bid as a Build America bond in the entire United States. It's the first Arizona issue that's been issued this way under any circumstance, negotiated or a competitive bid. And I spent the last 3 days talking to bond traders about this deal, and So I would just open it up for any questions. But what basically happens here is that the winning bidder had a net interest cost as a taxable deal of 6.34%. And the federal government says we will pay 35% of each semiannual payment. And what I did was I recalculated the bids in your right-hand column of your summary sheet for this issue as taking out the 35% the federal government will be subsidizing under the stimulus program, and recalculated the NIC on that net basis, and so that's where we're getting to 4.12%. The actual bid was 4.12, and as several of the bond traders indicated to me, the one other aspect of this deal was that most of the Build America bonds to date, these taxable issues, have been sold with make-whole calls, which any of you that have been involved in finance understand what that is, but it's an onerous process if you ever try to refinance the bonds, because you have to make the investor whole as if they continued to receive the same payment of interest at the higher rate if you try to refinance it. It makes refinancing very difficult, if not impossible. What we decided to do was go out on a apples-to-apples basis, and we put a par call in no matter how they bid the bond. So it, in a way, it was unique in the marketplace, too, because there have been articles and some research involved saying, do Build America bonds really make sense if you have to have a make-whole call? We don't. We have a par call. So everything worked exactly as we had, better than we had hoped and better than we had projected. So I'm grateful for that, but I think it's because the market's evolving, and that's, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we're really happy with how things worked out with the utility bonds. The reason we didn't do the GEO bonds and give them that option that way is to Build America bonds, which someone probably would ask me. There are some technical issues with the GEO bonds, the way they're paid, the tax levy, and so forth. We weren't able to work through all those with bond counsel, but I think in Build America bonds are only good for this year and 2010, and then they go away. Next year, we're going to come back and try to, if the market's still advantageous, where these taxable Build America bonds, we'll try to find a way to solve the GEO technical issues involved, but we weren't able to come to closure on that. And with that, I'd answer any questions you might have about what we're doing here, but the results, I think, speak for themselves.
Just to recap, basically last year or in any years, we've had one option. That is, we go out and we issue, and because they're municipal bonds, they're tax-exempt bonds. Right. And that's how the market's always worked. What you're saying is that as part of the stimulus package, that since the way the interest spreads work and everything, there's usually a big spread, and people gravitate to tax-exempt bonds because of the tax benefits, which raises the yield or what they can actually earn on those bonds. Because of the way the markets are right now and everything is part of the stimulus package, that yield differential has been sort of messed up, as I understand it, which makes it for a very tough market for cities to go out and sell bonds, because there's not the traditional big gap between the tax-exempt and the taxable bonds. So the federal government said, listen, we recognize that. Go out and issue taxable bonds, which is different, a different option than what we've always had in the past, and we will subsidize the interest rate.
That's absolutely accurate. And they did the right thing, as it turns out, in this case.
And by doing that, they've created a very vibrant market for municipal bonds that otherwise wouldn't exist. And it also, for us, once again, trying to do an apples-to-apples type of a thing, if we'd have gone out into the same program that we had of last year, which was simply a tax-exempt program, what we're saying is that with this Build America being able to sell these bonds under the different program, it will actually not only created a very vibrant market for us, which attracted several bids, and that, Mr. Raines, is what has caused us or allowed us to earn or save $12 million on interest rates over what we otherwise might have had to have paid under the traditional tax-exempt only program.
That's correct, Mayor. $12 million in future interest costs over the full life of the...
Well, $12 million is $12 million. I like that number.
It is. It made my day yesterday. Yes, sir.
That's money in our pocket.
Yes, sir.
I like that. Great. Councilmember Finter.
Obviously, this is way out of what I do, but we've had some recent favorable ratings by Standard & Poor's and by Moody's. That's been a long result of efforts at the city's part to make sure our funds and different things are handled well. Is there any way to calculate the savings that we've experienced from, say, a couple of years ago to now of those efforts?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Finter, actually our ratings didn't change. I can tell you it's kind of been a roller coaster, because after having the rating agencies here and having a great presentation by staff and by the mayor and taking them around, we thought that the Moody's Investor Service, who's always had our GO bonds at A1 and utility bonds at A1 as long as I can remember, the last 20 years, we thought we would get an upgrade. And so I was bummed out to hear back from them that they said, no, we're going to keep it where it is. And I won't go into my editorial comments about why that might be, but Moody's came out about a week before they gave us our rating review and said, we're putting the entire municipal bond market on the downgrade, a negative watch, because we're worried about the finances of municipalities. For whatever reason, they did not upgrade our bonds. And so I can't really do that analysis, because S&P Standard & Poor's has had us at AA for some time now for the GO bonds for about the last 15 years. So there's not really a savings involved, because there were no upgrades involved. They just kept us at a AA minus on the utility bonds.
Well, but like what you're saying, though, is that they have been downgrading other municipalities, and they, like you said, they put things on a negative watch. So in a sense, holding steady.
And we did get upgraded by S&P last year.
You're right, to AA minus on the utility bonds.
I think the councilman just, is there a way to quantify that upgrade, if we had been at, and I don't know, did the bond insurance kick in? Was that a
– Well, that's a – I didn't really want to get into that, but Mayor, members of council, Manager Brady, yes, the insurers are – the last two AAA-rated insurers are taking hits now, and they may be going away. Assured Guarantee got downgraded on Monday when I was talking – just as I was talking to him about these issues. And they told me that they didn't feel like they were going to qualify these deals because you're too highly rated. And because their ratings are – they have one AAA out of the three rating agencies left, they felt like no one would take the insurance. I told them I thought somebody would, but they did not qualify. Neither of these bond issues sold with the bond insurance. FSA, which is the other remaining AAA with S&P, Moody's has them at AA. And I don't know about the Fitch rating for FSA. I heard from them on Monday as well, and FSA is under rating review siege right now also from S&P, and they said that they have too much exposure on Mesa utility bonds right now. They have $250 million or so of exposure out of your $800 million of utility bonds you have outstanding. They said they didn't want any more exposure, and then they said something about the real estate market in Arizona, which, you can take that as a grain of salt. To answer your question, I can do an analysis showing the differences if these bonds have been sold as A-plus bonds with S&P like they were last year and the AA-minus bonds. There will be a small difference in the interest rate, and we can do a calculation on that. There won't be much because, to make things complicated further, the way the bond market prices bonds is they look at the lowest rating. And so what I'm saying is when the bond bidders came in on utility and geo bonds yesterday, they were looking at pricing the bonds off the A1 rating, not the higher rating, because that's the way the bond market works. It's a kind of a, you know, they look at the dark side of things, and they won't use the better rating. They'll use the lower of the two ratings to price their bonds because they don't want to overprice the bonds and get stuck with them. So we can do the analysis, but just so you understand, realistically, they won't price them off the S&P rating.
Just to add to that, as Larry did say, they reaffirmed our bonds, and I will provide you with the copy of the write-ups for all both the GOs and the revenue bonds from both Moody's and Standard & Poor's. But they did go through, and you'll read in those that they talk about, you know, the city has made significant strides in improving its fund balances and moving forward. So for us to be even reaffirmed at our current rates in this market is pretty good for us, too. Well, so I think it's been pretty positive.
And the truth is the services have gotten hammered because of their credit default swap mess, right, and all that kind of stuff with where they sort of missed the boat on that. So I think the hold steady is pretty good. And we need to remember, we're not in the business of getting bond ratings. I mean, those are great. It's nice to have an affirmation from a third party that, you know, we're doing things at least that's recognized as good financial management. That's great. That's nice. There's a savings that comes out. But the fact of the matter is, you know, city government exists to be city government. And this is an added thing that we strive for, but it's not our primary emphasis. I wouldn't give up base services to get a bond rating. And sometimes there's a temptation to lose sight of that fact. I think it's great that we can accomplish what we accomplish and also have people recognize that this city is financially well managed and has been for many years. So that I think is a great accomplishment.
And Mayor, as negative as that non-upgrade was, to come back and be able to see, to have the market evolve for Build America bonds with the kind of savings that provided much greater interest cost savings than you would have had with an upgrade. So yeah, maybe, I guess we got to look at both sides of that picture.
No, that's definitely a glass half full type of thing. I'll take the $12 million any day. That's great. Oh, and by the way, that $12 million is spread out over time, but it is money in our pocket. It doesn't all of a sudden appear for the 09, 010 budget.
For those of you,
I wish it would, but it doesn't.
Now, the former mayor would have told me what the present value of that was and out of his head or something, so Mayor, and I would have said, no, that's not kind of close. That is the number, but basically it's a little bit under $6 million on a present value basis if you calculate it that way.
Hey, you know what? If it's $1, it's good. Anything to the positive right now is good. So, Vice Mayor?
So again, even through this whole explanation of the last few minutes, bottom line is we maintained when other communities have been getting downgraded. So if the market had not tanked, had the financial industry not tanked, our rating would have likely gone up. The mere fact that we held steady is considerably important.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, I'd like to think so. Yeah, after the I thought came away from those rating review process with Moody's really optimistic, and I think so. I think it's just a matter of time for the entire economy to improve. We'll see some.
At the end of the day, Council, it's today that really is the scorecard on, you know, how your ratings look like or whatever. The fact that,
you know, we really did well in the market as far as the interest rates, absolutely, and that's really becomes the final benchmark. So
that's great news.
Mayor, that's really all of our presentation. We can get motions on both item 3A and then a motion on item 3B, option 2. Before that, though, I would like to thank Larry and Keith Hoskins from our legal counsel, Gus Rosenfeld. They've been very flexible in the past 3 weeks, trying to adapt to this new strategy, to do things that we haven't done before, and to get ready for this. And I think the results have been very positive for us, and we really appreciate all their work and their flexibility and the time and getting up to speed on all this, because this just started with a question about what is our option related to this. And they took the ball and ran with it, and here's where we're at. So I really appreciate their work.
Great. Well, and it's nice to hear that once again we're at the we're at the forefront of doing, of trying some new things. And when you say that we're one of the first in the country and certainly the first in the state, that's...
Well, Mayor, I was speaking with another bond attorney from a different firm, not Keats, and his comment was, well, Mesa's not exactly known as being the on the forefront of these innovations, so I was a little offended by that, but so now you are. Nobody can...
Well, he obviously doesn't know the history of what Mesa's done over the last few decades as far as leading in many areas, you know, first to implement citywide recycling, and from a financial standpoint, yeah, we'll give him a history lesson one of these days. And I can do that. I may not be able to do present value in my head, but I can do that. Okay. So the items on the table are item 3A, which is the providing for the issuance and sale of $61,830,000 aggregate principal amount City Mesa general obligation bonds, and item 3B, option 2, which is supplementing the city's resolution number 6362. Authorizing the issuance and sale of $59,900,000 in utility systems revenue bonds. We have a motion from Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we did both options.
Next item on the agenda is items from citizens present. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
No requests? So, motion to adjourn. Motion from Councilmember Summers, second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are adjourned. We now will move into our regularly scheduled study session for Thursday, May 7th, 2009. And the first item on our agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction. All three of those on the fiscal year.
One time.
All three at one time. Fiscal year 2009-2010, human services funding. Mr. Villa.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're here this morning to kind of do a quick presentation on the safety model that we use for supporting and recommending funding for human services funding. Additionally, we're going to do discussions on how that model is supported through our agencies that we support through our human services funding. With me is Lisa Wilson, who is the human services coordinator, who will kind of take us through the presentation.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Again, I'm Lisa Wilson, and I'm going to go over the community safety support model with you. Back in 2005, the City Council adopted the community safety support model to fund the human services programs that lower the impact on the safety services within Mesa. I'm not going to read that to you, but here are some programs that we've been funding for 08-09, and we've prioritized these programs to try to fund them for the 09-10 year. Central Arizona Shelter Services is one of those programs that fit the community safety support model that helps single women get shelter. We have some New Leaf programs. Autumn House Domestic Violence Shelter is one of those programs as well that we have been funding. And here's a few other programs from New Leaf. The Mesa Boys and Girls Club Teen Center, that program is a... It's located in the Oestro neighborhood, and the teens in that area utilize that program. It keeps them out of trouble. They teach us coping skills and anti-gang violence. Community Bridges is another program that has been utilized by Mesa PD and the fire. They're able to drop someone off at the detox center with a short period of time, and it also cuts down on their personnel downtime. Mesa Family YMCA, the First Offender Program. That program is a peer counseling program that they partner with the Mayfield Center of a New Leaf and provides counseling for first offenders. And the East Valley Senior Services, we have the Mark Center. These two programs here were considered for funding by the Human Services Advisory Board. The Retired Seniors Volunteer Program is one program that we had funded in the past, but we do no longer fund because we're trying to really fund those programs that fit that community safety support model. some other programs that were considered, Care Partnership and House of El Elyon. And basically what we're trying to do is continue the funding at the 08-09 level for those programs that fit that community safety support model.
And Mayor and Council, so what we wanted to show is at the beginning, just really this is the slide, many slides you've seen, the community safety model are describing that model as it's in place today. And then what we've done is highlighted the actual agencies and the types of programs that really do interact with our public safety departments, whether it's gang intervention, whether it's placing individuals into community bridges, shelters or community bridges for domestic violence, detox centers, thank you, that's what I was looking for. And so our focus and what we would recommend is to continue that program where the funds that we have allocated to human services would focus on those areas. There are a lot of other good programs out there and a lot of needs and requests, but we would suggest to council that we not defund or not fund some of the, like, for example, the East Valley or the Boys and Girls Club Gang Intervention Program. We feel like that's a very important program that has a direct impact on public safety, that that needs to continue to be supported. So what we're seeking is really the council direction that you would consider continuing to fund that program with that emphasis as it relates to our public safety groups. And what we'll be proposing from the financing of this, and we mentioned this, I can't remember if it was last Thursday or whenever we talked about it, is we already have a level based funding in the budget today from the general fund. We are, as we mentioned before, we're going to go through and open up an amended process in the CDBG, and we'll seek to add additional funding to these agencies. And the balance that we're not able to achieve through CDBG, then we'll try to make up the difference from just this in the general fund, what's needed to get back to the levels we are today. The only difference that I would see that would be difficult for us to get to is there's funding that we don't, that comes from the utility bill, the ABC funding. That actually has dropped, and usually we adjust the budget as that adjusts depending on donations. But otherwise, that comes from the general fund. We will then, after going through the CDBG process, try to get back to the public safety model and get back to the levels that we are in the current fiscal year is what be the proposal.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I really appreciate the presentation, and I think it's important for us, again, to hear what's been said is that we're maintaining funding versus reducing funding, and I think that's I think city staff has done a wonderful job in trying to make this happen. This, I think, sends a strong statement to our partner nonprofit communities, and so I truly appreciate the work that's been done. I think it's important to continue on the emphasizing the community safety model, because the return on investment that we get, that our community gets from that, and we as a city get from that, is very significant in terms of our other public safety services. I also think that we should go back and revisit the ABC funding program. For those of you who don't know, I was the original sponsor of that program, and the model that we originally had had, in terms of its presentation, had much more success in working with the community and seeking funds. And so I'm going to go back and work with Lisa to go back and look at the original way we presented it to the community and the council, and the manner in which it was in effect for a number of years that was highly successful in raising funds. And perhaps it's an option for us to look at in the coming year to see how we present that model to the community, that it, maybe going back to the original concept might help us go back to the original levels of support that we got from the community. But I just wanted to compliment Mr. Brady and his staff for doing a very good job and being very sensitive to the needs of the community.
Thank you. Community safety model is a great name. I like it, but it's like government speak. Trying to understand this, is this, as I understand our approach, it's basically we're going to spend money as a city, and we can either choose, let's say gangs, we can either choose to spend it on the front end or the back end. And as I understand it, the way that we've approached our human services, that we've decided that there are certain activities we would rather spend money on the front end in prevention, for example, gang prevention, in these other programs, and that we get, we can reach the same goal and objective and the same end for a much lower investment than we can if we spend nothing with these agencies, let the things just play out, and sooner or later we're going to be dealing with this youth. Our police department is going to be dealing with this youth because they're in a gang and we're going to have to deal with them through the police and the justice system versus dealing with them through the Boys and Girls Clubs, that hopefully we can keep them out of gangs. And that's sort of the overall approach we're taking with this community safety model. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, sir.
We can either spend it now or spend it later, and if we spend it now, we're going to spend a lot less and have a lot, not only the money, but from a human standpoint, it's a much better result because we have the opportunity to have people that are in society that are actually contributing to the community rather than taking from and sucking out of the community, which happens if we just leave this alone. I mean, I know that's way too much of a business approach to things, and I hate doing that because these are people we're talking about. But at the end of the day, I know there's a lot of questions as to why would the city even be involved in some of these things, and I think it's a very wise involvement because, you know, the city is people, and how we allocate resources to those to help our citizens and our community, I think, is very important in the approach we take, and I applaud this approach, which I believe is a much more efficient, effective manner to approach the needs of our communities.
Yes, Mayor, and I'd also like to point out that the shelter services is not just shelter that is accompanying this. These folks are getting counseling, they're getting job training. They're really building self-sufficiency.
And once again, once they do that, then we don't have to deal with them through our police and fire and other things that we're going to spend the money and we're going to utilize resources anyway, and we get a twofer on this, is how I'm understanding it. Okay, I'm glad I understand it right. Any other questions or comments? Okay, the direction then, move ahead as presented?
Council's fine with that. That's what we'll move forward with then.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
We'll do that.
Wait.
Councilmember Gritchens.
I don't know that I'm completely clear on what's being recommended. So,
well, we're recommending.
I'm seeing a spreadsheet here that the spreadsheet that Dehannis has three different amounts.
Oh, right. And so the public safety model that we've proposed is consistent with the staff recommendation. And the difference, really, the staff recommendation is in a dollar amount less than the current fiscal year. And so that's what we talked about is going through the amended CDBG process,
right.
And working with some of these agencies that we've already identified as providing programs that meet this community model, and working with them, helping them to go through that application process. So hopefully they will bring to council another allocation of dollars, of CDBG dollars for there. And then the difference, whatever isn't made up in CDBG, then we will work in the general fund then and work with those other departments. The only difference I'm going to say is that this year's funding, or way we were able to fund, also is dictated by the ABC funding. And that did decrease, and we wouldn't be making that up. We'd be keeping the general fund contributions the same as it is this year. So there'll be a slight decrease throughout, but it won't be nearly as much as we've seen before. And I can't remember what was that difference, $60,000 or so?
Yes.
So that's what we're going to propose, and we'll move forward into the proposed budget going that way. We'll work with the agencies because some of their budget amounts won't be set until we get through that amended CDBG process, and but we'll work with them to keep them going through the year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation discussed by direction, once again, all three of them, on budget issues. We're going to talk first about the transit services, including Dial-A-Ride.
Good morning, Mayor. I'm Dan Clevenger from the Transportation Department. With me is Mike James, Deputy Transportation Director. The presentation you have today has been modified just a little bit from what was distributed a couple days ago, so I just want to make sure you're looking at the most current copy. We've presented twice in the last few weeks on transit issues to the council. We talked quite a bit about the increasing costs for fixed route bus and Dial-A-Ride. We've proposed some service adjustments to address part of the budget shortfall, but what we'd like to do today is talk maybe at a little higher level about some of our challenges and get some policy direction on the future of transit in Mesa. If you look at this slide is one of the council's five strategic initiatives. On the transportation or transit side, this requires regional cooperation, innovation, and sustainability to overcome some of the transportation challenges we're seeing today. The Transit Division's mission statement is in alignment with that strategic initiative, and we aim to enhance the quality of life for citizens and visitors of all abilities by providing a safe and efficient transit system. I'm going to turn it over to Mike to briefly describe today's transit system, spend just a little time identifying our challenges, and then hopefully start a discussion on policy direction.
All right. Thank you, Dan. What we've got here, this first slide, is really just a map of our primary arterial bus system. We have 13 routes, and several of those being funded by the half-cent sales tax, Prop 400 money, the remainder of those being funded by the City of Mesa. We also have six express bus routes that run through the city, as well as... We also have six express bus routes that run through the city, as well as our downtown circulator, the Buzz. In addition to that, we have one existing bus rapid transit line, our Main Street Link, and we also are planning and designing a Country Club Arizona Avenue Link to begin service in July 2010.
And Mike?
Yes.
The Link and the BRT are synonymous.
Synonymous, yes.
Yeah, because I know there's been a lot of questions for me, and they talk, questions asking if they're separate lines. No, the bus rapid transit and the Link are one and the same thing.
That's correct. Okay. Link is really the marketing name that Valley Metro has used because it does link with the light rail system.
Very appropriate then.
Yes.
It has to spend hours.
A committee came up with that. How much did they pay a consultant to come up with that?
That was actually done in-house by Valley Metro.
Good. A new way of doing business. Councilmember Richens.
Just a quick question. We have a Link bus that runs down Main Street and then a conventional bus route that runs down Main Street. Can you tell us why we have both?
Yes. The Link is an express service that has limited stops. So it really stops at the arterial mile streets as well as Center Street in downtown. The concept there is that it's a faster trip because it's not making all those intermediate stops at each of the quarter mile or less bus stops. So because it doesn't make all those stops, it only stops at the mile, you need an underlying local bus service so that if you don't live at those or you can't get onto those arterial streets, you can still catch the Route 40 or the Main Street to make that trip or connect to the next Link stop if you want to do that. So you really need you have the enhanced service, but you also need the local service for those intermediate stops.
For the locals?
Local, yep.
The non-linked?
The non-linked
people.
Non-linked.
Okay.
In addition to our fixed route bus service, as you know, we also have citywide dollar ride, as well as our coupon for cabs and mileage reimbursement programs.
Mike, Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Just before you move on, it's kind of what Korshnoff, Councilmember Richens, have you ever done, like, now that we have the Link, or not the Link, what'd you call it, the BL?
BRT.
Thank you.
BLT. BLT.
We have those two.
Hold the mail. If more people are riding the BRT and there's less ridership on the regular route, do we have those kind of numbers to know that? Now that we have this other bus and actually the people are using this more because it's quicker and, you know, will there be some time in life where we say, geez, everyone's riding the BRT and we're going to get rid of the standard bus route?
We probably wouldn't do that, but what we have done when we implemented the Link
We probably would or wouldn't. I didn't catch that. We
probably would not do that because we don't want to leave people stranded that don't live at those mile stations. But we can work with RPTA to balance those routes. If we have a whole bunch more service on the Link, then we can ramp those up. We actually did that because initially the Link service didn't have weekend service. So we took some of the additional headways from that 40 so that we could get people out to Superstition Springs Mall on the weekend. So there is some balancing that we do with that. We do have those numbers. I can share, for example, the March numbers that we have.
Oh, where people get on at every stop?
Not specifically at that, at every stop right now. We're working towards that. But
Mike, I think the real question is it something that could be considered?
Yes.
As an adjustment, especially if you extend a light rail, and you know, the question is, would you really need to continue to have a local route going down the same route, and then just identify that if you want to get on a bus, you have to go to those major arterials? It is something we could look at.
We could look at it. Okay.
The numbers tell us. And see.
We'll let the numbers. What's actually happening? We actually have more riders on the 40 than we have the link right now, okay, because of those extra stops.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Hey, Councilmember
Summers.
Summers Scott. I was going to say Councilmember
Scott. We have the same name, man.
I know. I just wanted to call you Scott, and I'm going, Councilmember Scott.
Okay. Scott works too. Summers. Good enough for my mother.
Still early.
Here, have some of my coffee.
Dangerous.
Mike, we one of the favorite topics of the council is talking about federal prescriptions to local problems and the mandates of the higher levels of government on us. So, Title VI?
Yes.
All right, I don't want to confuse it with Title IX and start a basketball team or anything. Title VI. Title VI requires mass transit, and so
that really got you guys.
Requires us to provide some mass transit here. So, with the light BRT, how much would that qualify to replace Route 40 or not? And of the routes that Mesa currently provides, if we can go back to slide 4, maybe pop that one up so folks can see it. Perfect. How many of these routes are protected under Title VI? What is Title VI? Just simple definition. How many of these routes are protected under Title VI, and how much leeway do we have to play with these routes or times?
Yeah. Title VI relates back to social equity, federal law to protect low-income and minority populations. And if there's a threshold set by Title VI, for the city of Mesa, all of our routes are Title VI except the Gilbert Road route.
And why is that not a Title VI? Just to
basically, it doesn't qualify on the low income or the minority population criteria.
So based on that, is Route 40, right? Main Street is Route 40. So is Route 40 something that we could cut out because we have BRT, or does BRT not qualify as mass transit along that route?
I'd have to clarify that. I know that because we have the 40 there today, we would qualify for Title VI.
80, okay. Yeah. So that would be, you could look, probably not, but you have to look into it. Would that be the right answer?
Right.
Okay. So fair to say that there's not a lot of slack in this as far as systems and routes and such?
That's right. Correct.
And the only thing we probably could do, although we should look at it, is what times, the time between buses?
Right.
Which is what right now, 30 minutes or?
Right, we're running 30 minutes.
And what's the maximum allowed under Title VI? 1 hour?
There really isn't a maximum amount, but, you know, the lowest service level we'd really want to put out there is hourly. And we actually do that on the weekends for Link. We run hourly service on the Link and the 40. So with those two services, you have a bus every half an hour. So we've tried to maximize the amount of service that we get through Prop 400.
And just to be just a tad bit silly, which is shouldn't be unusual for me, could we run this thing one time a day and meet Title VI requirement? Does it get?
I would have to check with the city of Phoenix, who does our
ADA. I'm not advocating that. I'm just wondering how.
But you talk about possibly maybe running at different times in the morning, and then you can adjust during the afternoons, then come back maybe at different times.
Yeah, and we actually
do that.
Yes, we can. And we
kind of like a 533 route, or the
what do you call those routes?
The expresses.
Yeah, so you'd run it during the day and then run it in the afternoon, kind of during those job commute times.
Yeah, and we've actually done that because of our last round of service adjustments on the Gilbert Road route. We modified between 9 and 2. We go to one-hour frequency in the midday where there's less riders, and then at those peak times in the morning and in the evenings, we're on half-an-hour headways.
Okay. So in short, these routes, with the exception of Gilbert Road, are prescribed by the federal government under Title VI. We have to provide them. We have some flexibility with times, but there's not a lot of slack in this. So, all right. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
Okay. As you know, the last several times we've been talking about some of our challenges, and just to give a summary, you know, costs are increasing, and most of these operational costs are managed by RPTA and not controlled by the city of Mesa. So we're taking an aggressive stance to work closely with RPTA and identify some savings both on local service as well as the Prop 400 regional routes and funding. We think that there are some improvements that we can make locally and regionally that will improve not only the funding for Mesa but all of the East Valley cities. Probably don't need to repeat that the city sales tax revenues are down. We're seeing the same thing with the Prop 400 half-cent sales tax, and that's a real direct hit, because 7% of the money that comes to Mesa goes to pay for a Dial-A-Ride. When those revenues are down, the city of Mesa has to step in and fund that additional cost. So it's a direct hit when those revenues are down on the Prop 400 as well. In addition, we've seen some uncertainty with state funding and the legislature wishing to shore up the state budget with some of the transit funds that come through programs like the local transportation assistance funds. So the funding really is unstable in those areas. At the same time, we're seeing a unique phenomena across the country as well as here in the Valley on demand. When it comes to Dial-A-Ride, we've got an aging population. This is across the country. As the baby boomers retire and get older, they're going to need more Dial-A-Ride service and other types of transportation. And it's not something that's going to go away for a long time, because following the baby boomer, you got the echo boomers coming. So we're looking at a 30-year time frame where special needs transportation are going to be an important and critical issue. At the same time, the economy is encouraging transit ridership. Last year, we saw gas prices go up, and that brought a whole new influx of riders that, even though gas has gone down, they're continuing to ride transit. And the American Public Transit Association has indicated that transit ridership across the country is the highest it's been in 50 years. So some unique challenges there.
Mike?
Yes.
Councilmember Fenter has a question.
Thanks, Mayor. I really appreciate hearing the first portion of this section when you're talking about looking at the costs and our relationship with RPTA. As you well know, there's several constituents in my district that are very concerned, follow that closely. They're concerned about how the fares are tracked, and there's been some challenges even on the light rail about some of the systems that haven't been working. I think people will really appreciate an active review where we can find some savings and really getting all those figures out into the public. That would help me as a council member, and I think that would do well for our citizens. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay. So as Dan mentioned, we really seek to initiate a dialogue and policy direction. We do have a suggested approach. We don't necessarily need a decision today, but we just wanted to put some points out before you. The first point is we're seeking to implement the recommended bus service adjustments that we presented at the last presentation. And I could hit those quickly. We're looking to shorten the Route 30, that's a university bus route, to Power Road and Main Street. And the reason that makes sense is we now have the Main Street Route 40 as well as the link. So those riders on university have two bus routes that they can connect to, basically at Baywood Hospital and Main Street and Power, to get down to the mall. So we're not leaving people stranded. They've got a couple options where that we can terminate that route, and they can connect to go down to the mall. You may also recall we recommended eliminating the last evening run on our city-funded routes. That would be the University Route, Broadway Route, Alma School, Mesa Drive, Stapley, and the Buzz. A couple other things we looked at is making the downtown Buzz consistent with the other Saturday frequency and going to a one-hour frequency on the Buzz. That would actually be 1 hour in each direction. So, you know, we do have a clockwise and counterclockwise service there. So we will have both directions on that as we currently do. And finally, eliminate Saturday service on the Route 108. That's the Elliott route that comes into Superstition Springs Mall. That's being done by another city, so we really don't have a choice in the matter.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Thank you. Yeah, you said you're counting the university, cutting the university route to power. Does that mean that 34 is what I can see isn't going up to the multi-gen center anymore?
That is correct. We'd also lose service to the Red Mountain multi-generation
center. So it's going to end at power, and you can, since you're going to exercise, you can walk the half mile, no big deal. Is there a sidewalk all down that street? I just wondered.
Of power?
No, on Adobe, the halfway street that gets you to the multi-gen, because I'm guessing not.
You're not on the north side,
I think we're missing some on the north side. I think you're right.
You know, and so,
we
can, you know, yeah, that's a big concern, because if we let retirees off the bus and then we want them walking in the street, you know, good luck. Okay.
Actually, Council Member Higgins, what we'll actually do is that will turn around the hospital, because we have to turn the bus around. So for those riders getting to the hospital, because the hospital runs 24/7, our buses don't, but they can get down to the hospital on the 30.
She's worried about the multi-gen.
Yeah, I know.
We'll look at that.
And then I don't see anything here that is dumping students off at the MCC Red Mountain campus. Are we cutting that out too?
We had intended to make that connection, actually route what was going to be our power road, arterial route. That was intended to come on this July with through Prop 400. But due to the lack of revenues, that's one of the routes that's being pushed back several years, or recommended to be pushed back. By the region, correct.
Is there any way of picking up a circulator to take kids up into campus? Because, again, I don't think there's sidewalks off both ways to get kids off of power and, like, McKellips into the campus. And it's a good, I mean, half a mile. It's not impossible, but it's not safe without sidewalks.
Right. And over the last few years, we have heard comments and requests to make that connection. So,
yes, and we're still going to push it back a few years.
The region is doing that due to the funding situation.
So is there something we can work with the community college that we could get some kind of little circulator van or something?
We could certainly sure, have some dialogue. Yeah,
because I mean, you know, this campus is growing even more with a new additional couple hundred thousand square foot building this fall, and these community colleges are going to become more, enrollments are up because mm-hmm. you can't afford to go to the big four-year university, yet we still can't drive them there. So it's been one of my big things of trying to see, can we get kids to campus that aren't driving?
Well, it may be to their benefit, especially if parking becomes an issue where that becomes kind of an incentive to encourage students to take the bus, and then I think ASU does that on certain areas too. So we could start a dialogue with MCC, and certainly it helps with their parking if they don't have to have as many parking spaces.
Well, once again, I think we're going to get to this as to what I would like to see the discussions at our city level go beyond whether we're going to run bus 4 or route 4 or route 10 or whatever, and go to what do we want to accomplish with our public transit. This clearly is a model that's not sustainable. I mean, when you have costs that are we don't control and revenues that are unstable and going down, and I would disagree with you on one. I think we are very certain as to where LTAF 1 and LTAF 2 are going, and they're going to go bye-bye. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably pretty certain, and I don't expect those to come back anytime in the near future. As long as those monies are sitting out there to be swept, I think the legislature's shown that they will sweep those. It's not sustainable, and we need to be talking about how transit fits in on a policy level is what we want to accomplish. And Power Road is a great example. And we've talked a lot about all the assets we have up and down Power Road from an educational standpoint. We have the Power Road Knowledge Corridors, a nice term, but we not only have MCC, but we have all the other educational institutions that start clear up on McKellips and go down to Gateway, and we've talked about the lack of transfer in and out of Gateway. And I think one of the things we probably need to look at is how do we connect, for example, the MCC campus on the north with the Polytechnic EVIT campus on the south, because to me there's a real connection there that goes far beyond people parking on an off-site lot and this and that, but there's all of a sudden now we can truly connect those and realize the benefits of having all levels of education connected. You could have a kid go to Red Mountain High School and pick up some classes and go either way, either go down to go up to MCC, go down to Poly. You know, as we heard the other day in a presentation, the delineation between high school, junior college, and college is becoming very gray. You have college juniors that are enrolled in college or high school juniors that are enrolled in college level classes. You have that's happening all the time, and I think we really need to look at what we're getting out of our transit system based on under the restraints we have, which is basically we don't have a defined or a sure revenue source, and we have costs that we don't control. I don't like that combo. So I guess I'll be quiet and let you finish your presentation, and we can pick this up at the end.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple more points. In light of the direction that you've just outlined, which is really our final point, is we would as policy direction look to for the short term maintain the existing paratransit service levels citywide for the next year, and then really work with you to develop a plan for our policy directions, and this is everything from our local and express bus, light rail, BRT, paratransit, developing nonprofit alternatives for Dial-A-Ride. And the time is really good, because if you look at some of our existing transit plans that were done 8-9 years ago or more recently as well, we've got a significant expansion in our planning documents in our direction, and that really doesn't correlate with some of the new priorities, some of the things that's going on in the southeast part of the city, and the funding and fiscal situation that we're in. So we really need to retool that, identify priorities and policies, as you've mentioned. So really with that, I would just open it up for discussion.
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mike. This is based on the mayor's comments and looking at this slide, I think that's fine. But one of the other issues that we need to address as we go through this is we need to set a pretty stable council policy on how we're going to address and fund and deal with transportation issues. There are federal prescriptions to this. There's Title VI that we have to deal with. There's making sure that we make the correct linkages. As the mayor has indicated, there's no link to ASU Polytechnic nor to the airport, and that just doesn't make sense, because that is that's really one of our budding economic hubs. And there are folks who are dependent upon transportation services for just basic life needs, whether it's to get to work or get to the to their doctor's appointment. They need those. And what we should stop doing, and it's not this council because it's been on a whole year, but we need to stop having this annual discussion and uncertainty each and every year over the last 3 years about what are we going to do now, what are we going to do now, what are we going to do now, and we keep filling the chambers with folks who are wondering, what am I going to do next if this doesn't work, and it's all yanked out, the rug is yanked out from under me, and my transportation is gone in a matter of weeks. We need to have some stability. We need to have allow those people to see what's coming, and we need to commit ourselves financially and through policy to providing the service that whatever we decide in the next 12 to 18 months, that is at least what this council is going to commit to for our tenure on this council.
And I would encourage us also on that process to make sure that is a very open and public process, that we reach out, maybe have some community meetings on the east side as well as over here, so we can have public input on that. Thanks.
Councilmember Kamenoff?
Thank you, Mayor. Mike and Dan, I want to compliment you on doing a very good job
and
in a very difficult time. It's, I think it must seem like coming to work on a sea of quicksand in terms of the changing revenues that you deal with and the increasing demands. And so you've done, I think, a very outstanding job in very challenging times, and I appreciate that. And I also think you're bringing the right message to the city and to the council that this needs to be a high-priority policy discussion for us. As you know, with the aging population, that's only the demands are only going to increase significantly. And I think a stable source of funding and solidly, clearly identified transit corridors are something that we need to look at, not only in terms of what you do, but in terms of what we do, in terms of land use planning and economic development, in terms of clearly communicating to the community what our transit corridors are and what we can do to help encourage people to live and work within the transit corridors to help correspond with the available funds that we have and the type of service that we can use. So I appreciate you bringing this forward, and I support your recommendations. Thanks.
Councilmember Richens?
Councilmember Kavanaugh brings up a good point about land use decisions. I mean, in the future, as we start looking at entitling retirement homes outside of places where we provide regular bus service, I mean, we need to really take a look at that and integrating our planning aspects and just maybe saying no, because it's just creating more and more demand for dial-a-ride if you don't have the regular bus service to some of these places. So I don't know if we can incorporate some of those concepts in transit plans into our zoning rewrites, but something that we should certainly take a look at.
Well, and I would like to echo and sort of add on to what has been said, because I think I agree with Councilmember Summers. We need to decide whether we're in the bus, whether we're in the transit business or not in the transit business. And it seems like every year we decide whether we're going to run Route 4 or not run Route 4, and I don't think that that's wise planning, and that's really not the role of this council. And I don't want to get into the micromanaging, because we're not set up to really do that. That's what we have professionals for. But we are in the business of deciding whether this city is going to provide transit service or not provide transit service, and to what extent. And so I would agree with what everyone has said, and I think that all flows together. I think you, for example, Councilman Richens raises some very interesting questions as to how we integrate our transit policy with things such as land use policy. And we do this with other transportation on a daily basis. I mean, when we have a freeway, which is a fixed route, we design land use considerations based on the fact that that freeway is there. And I think one of the things we have that's wrong is when we talk about transit, we don't think in the same terms as we do other modes of transportation. And maybe what we need to do, and what I would be in favor of as we move forward with maybe what Councilmember Summers is talking about as far as getting a policy that we are going to provide this, is that we maybe identify fixed transit corridors, much like we identify, much like a freeway or a light rail, and then we work around that. Because I think there's two things going on here. I think we have created a problem by allowing or not allowing, but by not taking transit transportation and transit in particular into consideration when we have land use. And the aging population is really going to present challenges to us as we get into care facilities and things like that. And all of a sudden, we're being asked to change or extend our services out to those places. We can accomplish that through land use, but we also, I think, need a change in thought. In many ways, I think our citizenry needs to understand that there has to be some movement both ways, because this is not a sustainable model. We cannot continue to go to everybody's front door. That's not a judgment call. It's not a philosophical call on my part. That is reality. We simply will not have the resources to be able to do that long term. And I think what we have to look at is a way to phase in, both through land use and through service models, a program where the citizenry understands that if they're going to need these services, perhaps they need to plan ahead and maybe avail themselves to the transit corridors and where we're offering that kind of transit. That's going to take a lot of planning, going to take a lot of forethought, and it's not something we certainly are going to put in the next week, month, or even year. It's something that we would allow people to ease into, much like the land use decisions, which I really think we need to as a council. And I would hope that staff would look at ways to integrate this overall long-term plan that provides us a sustainable model so we can provide the basic services and the needed services that our population requires, but do it in a way that's responsible. And right now, we don't have that. We're just sort of going with the flow, and I think everyone feels that frustration that we're getting it on both ends, and we have no control on either end. And that's not going to change as long as we don't run the system. We're just being sent a bill. So I appreciate what's been said by my fellow council members about the need to maybe change the way we look at this, commit long-term, but then get into some details as far as what kind of transit system are we going to have, where are we going to provide it, and, for example, if a care facility does come in, that's a great example of, listen, we're not going to be providing services in that area. You want to build it? Maybe one of the land use decisions is if you're going to build it, you're going to be responsible, and we'll try and figure out a way to do that. Is that sort of what we're talking about? Because we are not going to be providing services to that facility. You are outside of our quarter. Is that sort of what you're talking about?
A lot of times assisted living will provide their own transportation for their residents. But if you have a retirement community, and I'm not here to beat up on Sunland Springs or anything, but if you have a regular retirement community that doesn't have that service available to their residents, that's when the dynamic is created.
Well, and I think what we need to do is provide enough notice and say, listen, if you're going to buy in whatever part of the city, you need to understand that the city is either within this corridor where we are going to long-term plan on providing services, or it's not inside. And then you as a citizen can make that decision, just like you make it whether I want to live close to a freeway or not close to a freeway. I know a lot of people who decide, you know, because they work in another city, they decide they're going to live within a half mile of a freeway. Well, that's a conscious decision they make. Perhaps we need to extend as much as we can that same philosophy toward transit, whereas right now we're talking about moving the lines every year, and that creates a very confusing scenario. But I think it also creates expectations among our citizenry that are unrealistic, because we simply, from a financial standpoint, we do not have the resources to continue this model indefinitely. We just simply don't. And I'd much rather provide some sort of certainty long term than, as Councilmember Summers said, go through the annual rodeo that we do where, gee, are we going to cut this bus route, add this? And I don't know how we go about doing that, but I'd like to see staff come up with a comprehensive plan that identifies into the future specific transit corridors that comply with federal law, but also allow us to designate long-term. Here's where you can expect these services to be provided by the city. And if you're outside of that, your expectation is maybe or maybe not, but I would say right now we are not planning on doing that. I don't know how that fits with other members. It seems to be in line with what we've heard so far. Is that the direction we want to give staff? Councilmember Richards?
We're talking about working on these things over a 12 to 18 month period. So we're talking really comprehensively connecting transit and some land use patterns, transit oriented development, that kind of stuff.
I think the overall plan. It's a comprehensive plan.
A lot of things.
Yeah. So it needs to fit.
So right now,
nicely with our zoning rewrite.
Yes. So right now, and I think it will in the zoning rewrite. In the zoning rewrite, I think what we're going to introduce is a transit component that takes into account availability now and in the future of transit, and that will work within the land use. Is that what I'm hearing from you? Okay. Yeah, the planning department doesn't like us right now, do they? So just to summarize, I think what the proposal is and what I'm hearing from the council is for 09, 010, we're going to hold steady with what we've got in the budget that's coming up.
Correct.
And so what we're really looking for is the first time this will come out is in our 10-11 budget. We will perhaps have these studies throughout that year, and it'll come really the first time we'll look at it. Maybe not the first time, but it'll become an issue is in the 10-11, and we'll start maybe implementation, or at least we'll have a plan in place.
Right, yeah, Mayor, I don't know that necessarily, I think we want to develop a plan. The budget is the budget, and it'll move along.
And that's what we need to understand. I mean, when we talk about it, if we're going to decide to be in the transit business, we're going to accept the budget issues, and that may mean that next year, maybe revenues are up, maybe revenues are down, and I think that if we decide that, there are budget considerations that we're just going to have to accept the ups and the downs of that. Councilman Richens.
Chris, when do we start our general plan update process? We do it every 10 years.
Right.
I mean, is this something that we would be leading? I mean, because there's a transportation component of
sure.
that general plan
That'd be
update.
Part of it, yeah.
Is this something that, I mean, we'll do this preliminary work and then it'll fit right into that? And
I would see, I certainly plan. Would want to. It makes sense that it would.
Okay.
Yeah, those.
I wasn't sure what the timing was on.
Yeah, well, I think we have to go and, well, that's another 12. Another November 2010, isn't it?
2010.
2010.
Yeah, 2010 is going to be a busy election year, by the way. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Goody.
So, yes, what we really want is the. I think what I heard from council members is we've talked here and otherwise about transit services is the getting comfort that. Let's move forward. We've proposed a few adjustments, but move forward the way we're doing it. But there was a real sense of, as we've talked about, is we know that we probably aren't going to be able to continue just assuming we can also continue to provide the same level of services throughout the city. We need to look at a strategy, an approach, and that's what we want to work with council on. And I think that can be integrated with, you know, our planning update, our zoning update, the general plan. All of those things will come into play. And I think, and Councilmember Summers talked about, you know, how do you pay for this in the future and looking at those options. So that's why we're going to give ourselves some time to have this discussion. And what we'll try to do is maybe when we come back in the fall is begin identifying maybe some topics we can use to kind of break this down. Because this is a big topic and start breaking it down and getting some direction from the council as we move forward.
One quick question, Mayor, if I might. How well used is the bus connection to the Red Mountain Multi-Gen Center? What's
That's
our ridership
what we need
there?
To look at. I don't
That's
know what
the only route is. I feel really uncomfortable eliminating service to that facility.
Do you have that number, Mike?
I do not have it with me.
Okay.
We can find that out.
And that brings up a good point. I think what we really need to do is that we need to, as we go through this planning process, mesh the key points and components. And rather than look at roads, look at
connections.
Hubs
Use.
And connections. And for example, we've talked about a hub, that, and you brought it up, Mike, that... Maybe 5-10 years ago, we didn't recognize that Power Road would be the major hub that it is, and we didn't think about it in terms of how that needed to be connected because of the educational and hopefully soon to be the economic drivers in that area. And we don't have a transportation plan that really recognized that. We're just running buses down roads, and I think we need to change that. I think we need to come up and have fixed. Offerings, and I don't want to say routes, offerings,
yeah.
Much like we do with street transportation when we decide to build a major road. I know it's not exactly the same, but in a way the concept I believe should be the same, which takes into account things such as what do we accomplish by connecting the multi-generational center. It's not to me just that people need to get there, it's what do we as a community accomplish, and I think if that's important enough to us, we'll figure out a way to get transportation there. But that's where the planning should come. That, I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, if there's a way to let's look at the numbers first and
yeah.
get good data. And if
I
you have some,
we just make a lot of assumptions that the data doesn't support always, and
yeah,
sometimes we miss opportunities.
I recommended it; it wasn't showing a lot, but we'll look.
Okay.
We'll look at it.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, is that a direction that the council feels comfortable with?
Okay,
thank you. Mr. Odom, next item is to update 2009-10 budget timeline.
Well, thank you for your final major direction this morning and officially kicking off the 10-11 discussions. So we get to finish up 1 year and start the new year right away. Just to go back and go over some of our final considerations, the 14th, which is next Thursday, we'll be delivering the preliminary budget documents. So that would be the preliminary budget book and the CIP plan. The 18th. We will have we will be including in that agenda adopting the utility rate notice of intention. On June 1st, we will adopt the tentative budget and introduce the utility rate ordinances. On the 22nd, we'll have public hearings on the budget and utility rates. We will also be adopting the 2009-10 budget, the 5-year CIP plan, the utility rates, and the secondary property tax rate.
Wanted to give you a heads up, Council. That's kind of where we head. So when we bring the preliminary budget presented to you next Thursday,
yes,
we'll give you the highlights of that. Just kind of review the numbers. One of the things you'll see as we adopt budgets, and Chuck, remind, help us. With the stimulus dollars, we actually have to we have to appropriate dollars for it. So even in these times when we're cutting budgets back, we're still going to have to recognize that we still have to accommodate, obviously, the expenditures for those stimulus dollars. So yeah, those are kind of coming in, and we're having to try to estimate what we think we may, additional programs that we may get in the future.
Well, so what we're saying is we're going to estimate high. This is different than previous years because we have a potential source. Exactly. In the stimulus dollars that we're going to have to accommodate in our tentative budget, which is a maximum budget.
Right, right. Exactly.
And that may or may not, I know always in the future it was always a may or may not, but we pretty had a pretty good idea.
This time it's a little more.
This time it's real that we may have stimulus monies that will flow in through the year
right.
that we have to accommodate or else we're not going to be able to.
Yeah, what we can
do. Yeah, and the worst thing in the world would be to have a great program set, show up that is a stimulus-driven program that we can't legally take part of because we didn't accommodate in our budget.
Exactly.
Okay.
And kind of give you a feel for how that's going to occur, the preliminary budget's going to reflect most of those stimulus dollars and most of the policy direction you've given us.
Right.
Now, some of the direction you've given us this morning will change getting into the tentative budget because we're going to have to increase some dollars.
So we're going to have maybe some cushion up there to allow room for in case additional
stimulus. And that's the one thing. You will see a big increase from the preliminary to the tentative to accommodate some of those things.
Gotcha.
And then when we get to the final, it'll reflect what we're looking at.
But we will have to be careful to explain in a time we're talking about cutting our budget.
Yes.
It actually may look equal to or greater than, but that's because the stimulus.
Thank heavens, even though we explain it, everyone will understand it just perfectly.
Yes, I'm sure they will.
Boy, glad we don't have to worry about that problem.
We will try to make that as clear as possible.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Are we going to clean that up?
Okay. Vice Mayor.
I just need to go on that again. This is, my seventh time going through this, and every year we explain the preliminary. It is a limit. It's not what we're going to spend. It's the potential of what may happen, but we're not necessarily going to spend it. And I don't care how many times we explain it, how we rephrase it, whatever. You always have the critics who say, look, they're out of control with this outrageous budget. But we have to, by law, make sure we accommodate the possibilities. And that's what we're going to do on the first number.
We want them to know, we're not to know this is only potentially outrageous.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead and muddy it up, man. Here we go.
I can't muddy it any more than it is by need. Thank you, Vice Mayor. No, that's true, though. And this is a challenging because we do want to accommodate opportunity, and the only way to do that is to include put in the cap and include some cushions, some space in there. Also on May 18th, I believe we have the Metro.
We're coming on a decision for the alignment. That's correct.
Councilmember Scott Summers.
Oh, hey, you got it. End of the meeting. This is great. On the easy. On the issue of the stimulus dollars with all the strings attached that we're fond of, I've mentioned before, Mr. Brady, that I'd like to have this council auditor continuously monitor that process and our compliance with all the federal requirements. We're losing our auditor. Are we not?
Well, he's
He's retiring.
He's retiring, yes.
We're losing him in a happy way. He's retiring. So are we making plans for his replacement?
I think that's a conversation we can certainly have with the council.
We probably need to start because I would like to have the auditor.
Sure. Gary has some very capable people that work in his office, and I think we'll introduce you at the next Audit Finance Committee to an individual I think will be, at least for the period of time while we're making that decision, Jennifer, I think can certainly help us out and has done a lot of the field work and a lot of the audits you'll see. I think it's very capable, and we'll introduce her to the council. That you give her, she'll be able to follow up. Now, we'll probably obviously want to make a decision moving forward just so that they give them the resources they need.
Yeah,
I've met her.
Remember, the auditor works for the council,
right,
not for the city manager. And so we're sort of in that no man's land.
Yes.
Because we don't have a staff that goes out and
we'll help
create. Yes, and creates the search engine, so to speak.
But I want to make sure that
take that
whoever the auditor is going to be, whether we're going to hire one outside or we're going to promote from within, whatever.
We need to start that process regardless.
Right. That's why I bring that up, and I think
city attorney sufficiently nervous on the agenda item that
Mayor,
sitting up for.
We'll put it on your agenda for the audit.
Right. Councilmember Summers, that item, the audit plan for next fiscal year, the 09-10 fiscal year, is one of the items on the Audit and Finance Committee.
So that would be included.
So it'll be ready.
And that's coming up. When's that meeting?
20,
oh.
Soon. This month. Sometime this month.
Yeah, it's okay. Soon. So.
Good. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. He reports on meetings and conferences attended.
Service Award.
Oh.
Yeah,
we had a whole bunch of them. Yesterday we had the opportunity to several members of the council and city management to recognize those city employees who have served 15, 20, 25, 30, and 35.
Three at 35.
A great event. It's always a privilege to be able to recognize those people who have given great service to the city. So thank you for giving us, as a council, that opportunity to celebrate that with our employees. What happened 15 years ago? Which one? Yes, it was really nice. There was a timeline we did see where 15 years ago, one of the major timelines that in the city budget, revenues exceeded the budget. Oh, pining for the old days.
Good old days.
Yes, the old days. Wax nostalgic. Let's bring those back. I'd love for that to happen. Councilman Richens.
Yesterday I attended NeighborWorks Symposium on Sustainability down in Phoenix, where I was able to present some of the things that the City of Mesa has been doing as far as sustainability. In that forum, I wanted to thank Donna DeFrancesca, I think is that the right way to say her name, and Kathy McDonald for the work they did on the presentation. It really looked great. It had a great picture of the goats eating weeds on it, and that was a big hit. For some reason, that really resonates with people. But I wanted to thank Donna for the hard work she did, and Kathy also for getting that together. And people were really surprised and impressed with what Mesa's doing as far as sustainability.
Good. Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Yesterday at this time, I was actually walking the halls of Congress and talking to congressmen and senators. I was back with the American Public Gas Association, which represents well over 1,000 public gas entities, Mesa being one of them, actually one of the larger ones. We have quite a considerable gas customer base. Lobbying on trying to safeguard the rates for our customers. There's really interesting things taking place back there where they're talking about energy and reducing the carbon footprint, and there are a lot of people in this current administration pushing for changing for cleaner energy, and in the process what they're going to do is they're going to force fuel switching, which is going to change generating stations to gas generation because coal is much more dirty, and in forcing them to do that, they're going to drive up our cost of natural gas because in all their infinite wisdom, they refuse to allow us to tap our own natural gas resources in the United States, and so without increasing the supply, they're going to drastically increase our demand and give us all kinds of havoc, and so we makes all the sense in the world, obviously, back in Washington, but quite a bit of advocating on behalf of our gas customers here and actually across the country. So it's an interesting trip.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
I want to thank Katie Brown and Lindsay Verstraten. I keep giving her name wrong. We had our Building Stronger Neighborhoods event on Saturday and it was very successful. I can't remember. I don't have the total number of people that had come out, but they were able to paint addresses on all the curbs in the neighborhood, which, as you guys know, the fire department loves because they actually can find your house in an emergency when your address is clearly visible. They also were able to paint fire hydrants and actually painted a house in the neighborhood. So it was very successful, and they all had a good time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just remind the council and the community, we have City Hall at the Mall. At Fiesta Mall, Saturday, May 9th, beginning at 10 a.m. So we invite everyone to come out and join with the departments and get to know about the services the city provides. Our next study session will be Thursday, May 14th. The Keno Pool Grand Reopening will be on May 15th. It goes from 5 to 8. And our next council meeting will be on Monday, May 18th. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else? Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. We have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Summers, second Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.